From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Disney's live-action reboot of its 1992 animated film, Aladdin, has hit theaters, and critics are oohing and aahing over the stunning visuals, resplendent costumes, and state-of-the-art CGI effects. But while the mega production company may be forgiven for engaging in Orientalist fantasy nearly 30 years ago, does a similar-looking reprise make sense in 2019? One main difference is that the cast of the 2019 live-action film is markedly more diverse than the voiceover actors of the 1992 animated film. Whether or not that protects Disney from accusations of peddling in stereotypes is up to critics. So let's turn to our own critic, Stephanie Abraham. She helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was the founding editor of Loudmouth, and her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. She's our pop culture correspondent and film critic. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Thanks, Sonali. It's great to be here.
So you got to watch the film already. I have only seen the trailer. I did watch the original 1992 film. And I'm wondering what your general impressions are, just purely in terms of artistry, setting aside the political implications.
You know, this type of film I walk into just kind of dreading as an Arab American, as a feminist, as a media critic, and just as a viewer. And I was actually surprised to be very entertained. I thought it was really well done. It surprised me how much I liked it, actually. When I first saw that Will Smith was playing the genie, I was like, that's a miscast. I saw that in the trailer, and I didn't think that would work. But it surprisingly does. He's a really funny and clever genie to watch. And then, you know, it's almost like a rom-com. So this is a story about two teenagers or young people, youngish, who come from different sides of the track. You know, one is a princess and one is so poor he has to steal to survive. And they both feel trapped in their respective worlds. And through that, they kind of find each other. So it's a love story. They have these animals. So the princess has a tiger and Aladdin has, you know, this monkey. And I don't know, it's just really fun. And then they transform this cartoon where if you're doing an animated film, like, of course, the characters to get away after he steals something is flipping and jumping and all these things. But they actually did that. So the acrobatics of it were really fun. You can see that I think they've really set it up for a video game because he's running and there's like fire and then there's snow and there's all sorts of like acrobatic things that happen that I could see young people being very excited about doing, playing a game with.
So let's talk about the visuals in through a more critical lens now. The original story of Aladdin is one of the 1001 Arabian Nights story, right? Tell us a little bit about where the story originates, because that's critical in how it's portrayed in film.
Right, yeah. So there's lots of debate around this, especially 1001 Nights. Historically, people say, and I'm not an expert on this, there are lots of experts on it, that you know, these were originally campfire stories from throughout West Asia in particular, and that some Europeans came around, kind of heard them, translated them, and made them way more kind of lewd and exotified and icky, you know, through the lens of Orientalism. And so Aladdin, it's debated whether it was even one of those original stories, but it could be traced to like 800 AD as the first story. So Fox actually produced this as a silent film in 1917. And, you know, so, and then of course Disney did in 92, they did it was their 31st film, like animated film. But it was the second best grossing at that time. So it did $500 million in 92, which today would be way more than that. And it actually brought in, after the fact, $60 million in rentals, because that was back in the day of Blockbuster when you could rent a movie that you liked a year after watching it.
Now, I understand that the original story was even set in China, and that over the years, that these characters were actually supposed to be Chinese characters, and then over the generations, as the story got changed, it became set in the Arab world, and that Disney's original idea for the 1992 film was that it would be set in Baghdad, Iraq. But then, of course, the Gulf War happened, and so Disney created this fictional country of Agrabah, which apparently the filmmakers just kind of mixed around a few letters and made something up that they thought sounded Arab-like, Arabic-like. There was this poll conducted in 2015, Stephanie. I don't know if you've seen this, that 30% of Republicans, so this was well before the 2019 reboot, but 30% of Republicans wanted to bomb Agrabah when they were asked about it. And that among those, 41% of then presidential candidate Donald Trump wanted to bomb Aladdin's fictional home, which to me kind of questions this decision that, oh, since Baghdad is a real place, but it was being bombed, let's create a fictional place that we're not bombing, which then right wingers want to bomb, and it makes us want to think about how Hollywood has this relationship to the Arab world, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have to root this discussion in Orientalism. And that was a term coined by the Palestinian scholar Edward Said. He wrote a book by the same title in 1978, Orientalism. And he used that word to describe the type of racism that affects West Asia, Central Asia, and South Asia, even sometimes as far east as China, right? As you said, Aladdin, some people think that it was supposed to be in China. And so this particular kind of racism sees the West as powerful and domineering, and the East, or the Orient, this imagined space, as kind of exotic, mysterious, and open. So when it comes to like foreign policy, you think of the West is strong and the taker, and or kind of traditionally male dominating, and then the East is feminized and the giver. So we see a lot of stealing through our foreign policy, and also in this show, right? In this type of fantasy. So one of the big things and problems with this, or a differentiation between Disney and Fox's original, is that in that silent film, it did take place in Baghdad, and it showed people in the souk, or the marketplace, worshiping. There were Muslims on rugs worshiping, and it was described as like a place of great worship. And here, there are no Muslims, even though it's in this imagined space called Arabia. Now, Disney has been, they were really criticized after the 92 film, because the opening lyric talks about how terrible it is to live there, and there's a line about like, we cut off your ear, and it's barbaric, but it's home, but hey, it's home. And so now in the new one, they've changed that to, they cut out the cutting the ear part, and they said it's chaotic, but hey, it's home. So,
Okay, chaotic, is that a euphemism for war, bombs being dropped from the sky
yeah,
by
I know.
American and other coalition forces?
No. So we also have to root this discussion in the work that Dr. Jack Shaheen did, who is a beloved Arab American in. Really, he just passed away 2 years ago from cancer, but I had the privilege of being mentored by him. And so what he did is he took Edward Said's idea of Orientalism and systematically applied it to Hollywood in his film Real, sorry, in his book Real Bad Arabs. So it's spelled REEL, like a movie reel, and the subtitle of that is How Hollywood Vilifies a People. It's literally an encyclopedia. So from A to Z, if there's any Arab characters, it talks about what it did. Sometimes he recommends films, but usually not. He identified five typical stereotypes. So there's the maiden, the sheikh, or the sheik, as we commonly pronounce it here, the villain, the Palestinian, and the Egyptian. Okay, so in Aladdin, the two stereotypes that are dominant are the villain and the maiden. So those things have been kind of punked or like girl riot girled up in terms of maiden. So
So they've turned her into
Jasmine.
a feminist icon now?
Yes, but see, it's like so much harder for girls now because they not only have to be open to getting married, because she's like, it's not that I don't want to get married, it's just that I want to be the Sultan, who's the kingdom leader. Okay, so you have to be the CEO and the wife. It's this like pop culture feminist kind of take on it, right? And they actually wrote a new song where she's singing about like, I won't be silenced or something. So when we talk about like this moment, you can see the Women's March and the Me Too movement kind of like making its way onto the screen in an interesting way. I mean, she wears flats, which for me is like a big plus. Like I
As
hate
opposed
wearing.
to high heels.
Yes, and like having to flip and run and do all these things in bikinis or something, And even her gowns, she's like wearing pants underneath them so she can move and be active, which was a real win. But that's sad that I think that's a feminist win on screen. Of course, it does not pass the Bechdel test, which is two women having a conversation about something other than a man. But we wouldn't really expect it to.
And in fact, are there any female characters besides Princess Jasmine?
Okay, so that's another problem with Disney films is the absence of a mother character. Cinderella, Snow White, Little Mermaid. There's always like the dead mom and this relationship between the daughter and the father, and then a budding relationship between the daughter and a knight or a prince. So there is no mom, which there wasn't in the 92 version either. Aladdin doesn't have any parents. He's also an orphan, but so that's a real problem with the Disney film. I think it really sets up. It's very conf I think it must be confusing for young people because you usually spend time with your mom. Like moms still do most of the work, especially like emotionally in the family unit. They're four times more likely to lead a single parent household. But then on screen, you finally get to see yourself as a little girl doing, a female doing something cool, but it's all about like your relationship to your dad and like maybe a male lover. It's very
Well,
strange.
it's also partly the superhero trope, right? Where you have to have the origin story of an orphan who overcomes their odds, etc. So what about the actual casting? I mentioned earlier that the cast is quite diverse. Of course, we have Will Smith playing the genie or the djinn, which is how Arabs might pronounce it. And you have a South Asian British actress playing Princess Jasmine and an Arab American playing Aladdin. Mina Masood, I believe, is his name, and Naomi Scott is the actress playing Jasmine. Is that progress? I mean, in a funny way, the casting also suggests this kind of mixing up of a world where there's brown people that are kind of Arabic, but also kind of South Asian.
Yeah, so that's kind of, they kind of leaned into that. I think they probably expected to be criticized for not having an Arab lead. And it's hard to act and be acrobatic and sing, but I feel like somewhere on this globe, there's an Arab American or Arab female actress who could have done it. But nevertheless, they casted Naomi Scott, who's a really great actress. She's actually British. Her mom is Indian and her dad is white from Britain. And she has a British accent in like her life, but she uses an American accent. So she and Aladdin have American accents, whereas others in the film have kind of Arabic-ish accents, especially the villains. Okay, the
One
villains.
wonders what these sort of like backroom discussions are that lead to
Yeah, I
these
know.
decisions about who should have what accent in a film that's a fictionalized, made up, a made up Arabic country for American audiences.
Yeah, and I don't know how they do that globally because I did read that I think they're translating it into maybe three different languages for India because apparently it's very loved there. So I don't know if they have like, if they do that same sort of thing. But in the US audience or the English-speaking world, it means that the audience is going to identify with those characters because they're more anglicized. Whereas the people who kind of have these foreign accents are more like more othered, basically, right? So to kind of, get on the front of being criticized for having an Indian actress, they leaned into it. So they made it even more of an oriental or orientalized imaginary space. So she has a tiger, which actually she does in the real one, in the original one too. But she kind of wears like sari type of clothing and like Indian, more like Indian types of costumes, which by the way, I thought the costuming was really great. Like, it was the things
it's
that
beautiful,
were really
of course.
Beautiful.
It's stunning, really visually got. Stunning. But you know, as an Indian American who was born and raised in the Middle East, to see my two cultures just kind of swirled around into the salad and, you know, thrown up on screen for American ignorant American audiences to consume is insulting. I mean, pick it's a side. Like, is it South Asian? Is it Arab? Is it what is it?
No, it's the Orient, Sonali. That's the whole problem. And so, and they do like Bollywood type of dance moves in it. It's very,
I mean, which all sounds very entertaining, and I can see myself enjoying it. I can see audiences both in the Arab world and in India enjoying it because they all do enjoy Bollywood films and culture. But yes, of course, there's definitely this this reliance on not being able to tell cultures apart, and us in the United States having to just be okay with that.
Well, if it were just a fantasy thing and like fiction and pop culture, that would be so awesome, you know. But unfortunately, it's not. And so we think of Afghanistan, which is in Central Asia, as an Arab country. We think Iran is too, and then Pakistan. You know, where we've had so many drone attacks, which you've covered a lot on the show. Like, so all of these places get also blended in our foreign policy. And so as Americans, we're kind of dumbified. We're systemically dumbified. You know, I really don't believe that we want to be kept out of the loop, but it's like a choice that has been done since Vietnam on purpose because we were exposed to so much of that war. And after that, they said, no more, we're going to like pull back and not let people really know. And then so in Iraq in 91, I was a teenager when the first Aladdin came out and when we invaded. And it was just like these little drops of light on the screen, you know, which are bombs being dropped. But it was like way more separated. And so, you know, the average consumer isn't making these connections like, what's the problem? It's really, oh my God, it is really colorful. It's so colorful and it's just fun. But you know, we're in a moment now where news is thought to be fake and fiction is actually an educator of the world. So the blending of those two things is actually quite dangerous.
I mean, I think of the hate crimes that occurred after September 11th, where Sikh Americans were targeted because ignorant racists thought they were Muslims because they wore turbans, and an ignorant racist can't tell the difference between a Sikh turban and the kind of a turban that a member of the Taliban might be wearing. And, you know, you think of the turban that the genie wears in Aladdin, and it feeds into a deliberate ignorance, American ignorance of the differences, the complex differences and nuances between various very diverse cultures in the Middle East and South Asia and North Africa and Central Asia.
No, yeah. And this is where, in particular, villains and maidens stereotypes are quite dangerous, because this is the place where, as a culture in the U.S., we get kind of like built up. You know, the Bush family has used Afghan women to justify invading Afghanistan because they needed to be free, right? So we have this complex of like, oh, we're so free, we need everyone else to be. And that's not true. But the stereotype that Muslim men in particular, and often Arabs, are like more tyrannical than the average man, and that Muslim and Arab women are more oppressed than the average woman, is a real, real dangerous thing that has been used to justify ongoing war now for decades. So in this film, what happens is, the, you know, every film needs a villain, fine. But these villains are like particularly vicious, where the kind of this cutting off the ear type of thing, right? So in the souk, in the marketplace where they first opens, you know, the princess steals some bread or something for these starving children. And the merchant, who has a very thick Arabic accent, like wants to cut off her hand. You know, and so you kind of like are set up to think, well, that's how things are back there.
So they didn't hold back from those, from such scenes.
No, it's like a little bit. I mean, they took away those lines, right? But Jafar, who's the bad guy, and he's like the bad guy, he kills one of his servants in the very beginning, which I thought was way too violent. I mean,
too ISIS-like. I mean, this is basically.
He, He like threw his servant down a well. You know, he should have like banished him to the ends of the earth or like put him in the cell down in the dungeon, you
In
know, but
line
like
with the sort of Disney's, you know, soft violence rather than the hard
Yeah, but
violence.
no, they
But
just
he's Arab, and so he's ISIS, and so he kills people for no reason.
It's terrible, just like totally cold-hearted. Yeah, no, really. So that's quite dangerous.
Yeah. Well, finally, Stephanie, could Disney have done a better version of Aladdin, or should Disney have just not done anything? Should Disney have left this story in 1992? Was there a constructive way to do a story like this, which is already a far removed fiction whose origin is debated? It's not a story that one can really trace back. I mean, it's possibly a real person's story, but it's so fictionalized. I mean, it's involving magic carpets and a lamp and a genie, so obviously it occupies a fantastical world. But could Disney have done a more responsible job?
I mean, I think, you know, for the record, I do think this is a more responsible job than the 92 version where most of the cast was white. And, you know, I think it does matter that most of the cast, going back to your earlier question, is people of color. And that, you know, I think a lot of the people behind the scenes were as well. They filmed in Jordan. Lots of the, you know, people on screen in the finale, what do you call it, when the credits run, were like Arabic names. I think that in itself is a big win. That has to do with the Oscar So White movement and the success they've had from Black Panther, where they've brought in over $1 billion, you know, but they've given a nod to, you know, it's a corporation. So they're going to absorb that which they can from pop culture and try and capitalize off of it. So that includes the girl power stuff around the Women's March stuff. Even Will Smith as the genie says he wants to be free, you know. So having a black character say that he wants to be free and not to serve anymore is a nod towards, you know, black liberation, which was not there in the 92
Right.
version.
However, I can I'm sort of dreading Halloween this year to see all of the Orientalist tropes and stereotypical costumes that are going to emerge from this particular film that little girls and boys and probably adults as well are going to be donning, and whether they'll choose accents or not. I'm just kind of scared of that whole thing later this
Heard about
year.
they call it Arab face, you know, like black face was a thing and still unfortunately is on many college campuses even. And Arab face, like people don't really understand how insulting that is. You know, Rhonda Giroir, professor Fresno, who's like a leading Arab American writer, she wrote a piece on why she hates white belly dancers, and the backlash was just like outrageous. People just don't understand
Well,
co-optation of culture.
I'd like to just end with a personal PSA to my listeners and viewers. Never, never wear a sari as a Halloween costume. Do wear it as an outfit to a wedding if it's an Indian wedding, but never turn it into a costume. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Sonali. It's always a pleasure.
My guest has been Stephanie Abraham. She's a writer and media critic. She helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift. She was also founding editor of the feminist magazine Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, and Bitch magazine. She's a pop culture correspondent and film critic for our program. We've been discussing Disney's new live-action feature, Aladdin. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.